Welcome back to the John Curley, Sherry Elicker radio program featuring Jack Stein, because John Curley, I spoke to him today, by the way, Sherry. Did I tell you that I spoke to the great John Curley today on the telephone?
No, you didn't tell me that. How's he doing?
He is doing well. When I called him, he said he's in Sonoma or Sonora. I couldn't really make it out because the connection was so bad. And he said the weirdest thing. He says, I'm driving around in the middle of nowhere looking for caffeine. I can't find any, so I'm going back to the venue. And he just sounded so defeated. But I was thinking, how do you not find caffeine? It's not like the venue is like in the middle of the woods, right? I mean, it's pretty easy to find caffeine at a gas station or whatever. He just seemed kind of dejected and lost.
Yeah, and wouldn't the venue, which probably serves some kind of food or drink,
right,
might have caffeine right there?
Right.
Huh.
And
you think
then,
caffeine was really code for something else?
Ooh, maybe.
You
I'm
know,
not sure.
Like I'm looking for a pork sausage, or I'm looking for a hamburger, or I'm looking for some other thing I can't get at the venue.
Yeah, exactly. Looking for some of that rhubarb pie, you know what I'm talking
right
about,
yeah.
Jack Stein. And then he said, he threw some auction jargon at me, which he spoke to me as if I knew what he was talking about, and I didn't, but I did the thing because I want to seem cool to John. Jacob,
uh-huh,
do you ever have this problem?
Do you think so you're asking if I also want John to think I'm cool?
Yeah, you ever have this issue?
I think I gave up on it quite
okay
some time ago, yeah.
Me too.
So,
No chance I'll ever fall into that category.
So John goes, yeah, I got 92 lots in 3 hours. I'm going to be up there all night long. And I was like, yeah, sounds tough. I have no idea what that means.
I think it means that he has that many items to auction off.
Oh, okay. All right. So was my answer appropriate? Or was it, so do you think John's going to think I'm still cool? Or do you think he's going to be able to know that I'm a faker as an auctioneer?
Well, he listens back to the show, so he officially knows you're a faker after that last statement. So you may be in trouble. You may be a little uncool right now.
Yeah, probably. But I'll tell you what else is not cool. Gig workers trying to – wait a minute. Actually, being a gig worker is pretty cool. You ever be an independent contractor, Sherry? You ever work as an IC, as I like to call them?
All the time, yeah. I do a lot of voiceover work, so yes,
right.
I do get a lot of independent work.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff, though, the gig workers that we're talking about in this article in My Northwest, this is mostly about drivers, right? So you've got your DoorDash and your Uber Eats and Instacart, and what they're trying to do is they're trying to have a minimum pay rate for these app-based delivery drivers. And some people are for it, and some people think it's a terrible idea. So right now, there's about 40,000 gig workers in Seattle. And so they're saying if they can get these gig workers to get a certain amount of money, that'll be good, because right now, they only work, they might make like $28 an hour, but
right,
they only work like 10 hours a week. So that's not a living wage.
So I have so many conflicting feelings about this. Here's what some gig workers had to say about the pay-up legislation that's being considered by the Seattle City Council.
Rover takes 20% of each and every job I do. And with a workforce of over 300,000, Rover makes over $1.5 million per singular job at any given time. When you have to choose between shelter, food, or transportation, this isn't a way to live.
Gig industry executives have made millions of dollars in personal profits off my labor and have no intentions of investing in me or any of their workers.
We believe that the principle that every worker should be paid enough to pay their bills, nurse their families, and especially when they're hospitality workers. It's good economics. We're all better off when the people who make, serve, and deliver food can afford food themselves.
I am trusting lawmakers to pass the pay-up policy for gig workers because we are not disposable and should not be exploited.
This is some crazy entitlement from some gig workers. So I agree that people should be able to, quote unquote, make a living wage. But that it's like you're a gig worker. That's what you signed up to do. The reason that Uber takes 20% off of the money that you make is because you are using their service. It's like you are renting from them the ability to use their algorithm and their technology so that you can go pick up other people. You know what I mean? It makes sense, right?
Absolutely. And the other thing is, if I of course, you know, I want everyone to make a living wage or be able to feed their families. I'm not against that at all. But in a market like we're looking at, right, where there are so many jobs available, there is so much opportunity out there. If you don't like what you're doing or you don't think you're being paid enough, hey, now is the time to move on. You can do lots and lots of other things. And I have a little bit of a hard time feeling bad for somebody that works less than 10 hours a week.
I know, that's a
pretty, you know, low bar there. I mean, it's not like they're asking you to work, 60 hours a week at $3 an hour. And the fact that they've made money, you're right. That's their business that they designed and that you've been able to take advantage of as a worker as well.
Can we listen to that first lady again? She just sounded
I think they're reading. I think they're testifying.
She sounds like she's putting herself to sleep with her own voice. Can we
Uber
hear that again?
Uber takes 20% of each and every job I do.
Uh huh.
Where they work first of over 300,000,
uh-huh.
Rover makes over 1.5 million per singular job at any given time.
All right.
When you have to choose between shelter, food, or transportation, this isn't a way to live.
It's like it was a robot. And here's the thing. I was an independent contractor. I've been an independent contractor many times in my career. When I filled in for Cairo Radio for about a year and a half, I was an independent contractor because I would literally get a phone call from Brian or from Jason Rantz saying, can you fill in tomorrow? Literally, it's like 7 o'clock at night. Todd Herman is out, or can you fill in for Aaron Mason or whatever it was? It was such short notice that there was no way for me to be on any kind of consistent schedule. So I would say, yes, absolutely. And then I did that. And then I eventually got a full-time gig. I also don't understand this because there are very clear-cut laws when it comes to what a gig worker is and what an independent contractor is. And I know this because I sued a guy for misclassifying me as an independent contractor when I should have been an employee. He had to show up at a very particular time. We used all of his equipment. We had staff meetings where he yelled at us all and belittled us all and told us that we were all horrible people. And when it came for me to file my taxes, I took them to a tax lady, and she said, describe your job to me. And I told her what I did as a radio broadcaster, and she said, you cannot file this 1099. You should go back and ask that man for a W-2 because I think that he's committing fraud. I think that he's trying to commit independent contractor fraud. And so I said, okay. And so I went back to my boss and I said, hey, I spoke to a lawyer and she said that I should do this. And Sherry, my life from that moment forward was nothing but horror and misery for like the next year. But I'll get into that story in a minute. Here's a spokesperson for a grocery delivery company who also made an argument before the council.
It's worth noting that 75% of our shoppers choose to work less than 10 hours a week for Shipt. And last year, Shipt shoppers made on average between $25 and $35 per hour when factoring in offer pay, bonuses, and tips. Delivery app-based work involves many nuanced factors in order to ensure the system works for both our customers and our shoppers. There have been no attempts to study the economic impacts of this measure, which risks economic uncertainty and risks the flexible work opportunities shoppers in Seattle value.
Right. So some of these people want to be gig workers. They just want to fire up the app when they want to work and then use their car as an independent contractor to go around and pick up other people or pick up food or whatever it is. I despise this idea that now somehow because they feel like they're not earning enough, they now have to force that company to reclassify them as employees when they don't meet that standard. Again, and this is coming from a guy who sued a guy for misclassifying me. So I know what the distinction is between these two things. It just sounds like entitlement to me, Sherry. You know, it's just like so entitled.
It is entitlement, and it's not fair to the private employer. These jobs are optional. If you want to do something different or you think you can make more money,
right,
it's a free market. Go out there. I have no sympathy for this. I mean, I have sympathy for somebody who can't make enough money to live. I honestly do. But I've been in that situation, and guess what? I worked two jobs or three jobs to make sure that I could do what I wanted to do. And when I did freelance work and was doing voiceover work, that wasn't always enough to you know, get what I needed. So I do other things to supplement my income. And so that's just the way it goes. I never once looked to an employer and said, you know, it'd be a really good thing if you increased my money because I'm making you so much money. So I want you to pay me more money. So because I don't want to have to work more hours.
Right.
I can't wrap my head around that. Go out and get more work. Work more and you'll make more money.
So when I sued this guy, he was the owner of a radio station, and when I sued him, basically the whole thing was premised around I didn't want to commit tax fraud. And when I went to speak to him about it, I said, listen, I spoke to this person. I want to file my taxes the way that the state of California tells me that I have to file my taxes. I'm not going to lie for you. And then over the course of like 6 months, I was hit with harassment like you would not believe. My job was threatened. I was told to quit. I was told that if I wanted to be an employee, that the owner would fire everybody and he would close the radio station. And then he told me sob stories about the people that I worked with. And he would say, you know, this guy in engineering, he hasn't paid his house off. And if I close down this radio station, who's going to hire him? He's in his 60s. It was like pressure until finally I submitted a letter to the guy and I said, listen, please give me a W-2. Otherwise, I'm going to have to go get a lawyer and we're going to have to sort it out that way. And he said, fine, you'll never win in the courts. And then lo and behold, Sherry, I won. I won like 8 months later. I won my case because the law is very clear about this kind of stuff. If you show up
at the same time,
same place,
every day, you're an employee. And
if it's not your equipment, if you're using somebody else's equipment, if you have to attend mandatory meetings like staff meetings, things of that nature, you are not an independent contractor. So I won that case. I won tons of money. And yet at the same time, I have no sympathy for these people who are clearly independent contractors who are just demanding something that they don't really deserve. And also, the tax breaks that they get as 1099 employees are ridiculous. You can write off everything in your small business. And all you got to do is take your receipts to H&R Block, and you're basically paying nothing. You might even get a return from the state. You would get money instead of having to pay taxes. And how do I know this? Because that's what my old boss wanted me to do. So I just think it's important for people to recognize, like, I don't see this as a good faith argument from any of these people outside of just being sorely misinformed about the difference between what an employee is and what an independent contractor is under the law.
I think they get hung up on the idea that because a company is making so much money that they are entitled to a portion of that and that it's everybody else's responsibility to make sure that they have enough money to survive. That's your responsibility. In whatever way that you can do that, that's your responsibility. It's not a company's responsibility to make sure that your rent is paid or that you have enough food on the table. It would be nice if we lived in a world where everybody took care of each other in that way, but we don't. We live in a world where people have businesses that are in business to make money and to be successful. You work for those businesses, you get paid a certain amount of money. If it's not adequate, then you have to make other arrangements in whatever way that is. It's not the company's job to make sure you can survive.
Why do you think the philosophy around that has switched? Because now people are saying that you and I are cruel and heartless, and we're coming down on the little guy. Even though, just so people know, at one point in time in my life, I would wake up at like 4 or 4:30 in the morning, and I would go to work for the photography company that I worked for. I worked for a sports photography company. I would take pictures of little kids up until about noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I would then drive to my drive time radio show. I would do the drive time radio show. I would get off, spend about 20 minutes with my wife, pass out, and do that all over again. And I did that so that I would be able to afford my apartment, and I didn't have to do it for very long before my career started to take off. And I think that this might be people's misconception or maybe they're not appreciating their own potential enough in their own skill set, right? They don't believe in themselves enough, so they're like, well, I guess I'll just be an Uber driver for the rest of my life, not realizing that they could potentially, if they wanted to, start their own business, do something like have your own driver service or whatever it is. Have your own concierge driver's service. Start your own business. Make your own thing. Maybe we don't champion that enough, which is why we have like Sleepy Lady being like millions of dollars. You know what I mean? Like we don't hold that up enough anymore to say do it yourself and make something happen in your own life.
Well, I think that people, get lazy sometimes, and I also think that people, you're right, they don't necessarily know their own worth or know their own potential, and maybe we need to do a better job of taking care of that or trying to promote that. But at the same time, I mean, I've never seen more information out there about the availability of work than the time we're living in right now.
Sure.
About the fact that we are in staffing crisis after staffing crisis. So it's a buyer's market. If you don't like what you're doing and you think you can move on to something else that's going to pay you more, why not do it? It's not going to be like this forever. It's going to shift. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for people that are stuck in something, because right now is a great time to make a change if you can.
That's right. You hear the music. Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. I went reviewing. I wanted to see what the reviews are, Sherry. All 5 stars for Kiel Mortgage. All of them.
That's
amazing.
Good.
Right?
Yeah,
Even my show on Apple Podcasts, not 5 stars. It's like 4.7, right? Kiel Mortgage got one up on me.
Wow. So yeah. 2 thumbs up for Kiel Mortgage and only 1 thumb up for Jack Stein.
Exactly. 1-888-778-KIEL. Proud sponsors of the John Curley, Sherry Elicker radio program. You going to the movies this summer, Sherry? Any movies that you're looking forward to? Top Gun, maybe Top Gun 2. You looking forward to that one?
I'm not looking forward to that, but I did see that Tom Cruise landed that helicopter all by himself, which I thought was pretty cool. Did you see that where he piloted the helicopter and landed it at the premiere?
Okay, so here's my problem with Tom Cruise is that, my problem with actors in general is that we kind of ignore that we have this class of human being in the United States that's basically an insane person who does insane things. And then whenever they come out with a movie, we all go, wow, isn't that such a cool person? But as we've learned recently, like Will Smith is a violent sociopath who is willing to strike a man in front of millions of people. Name any movie star out there. They all end up just being insane people. Tom Cruise is not removed from that. He's part of a religion which is wrought with human rights abuses. And so when I see fun stories about Tom Cruise, I can only think like, yeah, are we just going to skip over the whole Scientology thing? Are we just going to jump right over that? Am I being too much of a downer? Should I be a little bit?
I just thought it was cool. Flying a helicopter is pretty.
This is why I don't get invited to parties, Sherry, because I like this thing. And then I go, you know what the worst part of that thing is it kills people. Like I just.
I love the movies. I haven't been to the movies in so long. I just stopped going during COVID. And so I don't really know even what's coming out or what could be like a great movie to watch. I'm not a real action adventure kind of gal. Mm. So, I'd have to find something that was funny or, maybe like, some sort of a drama or whatever. Are you looking forward to anything? This is supposed to be a very, very good, summer movie year. They've lost so much money. Before the pandemic, the movie business made about $4 billion in ticket sales. In 2020, it went down to $176 million. Now, last year, they recouped some of that. They were back up to $1.7 billion. But they're hoping that this summer is going to be the summer that brings it back alive.
I used to be a go to the movie theater kind of guy, but now I'm like an old man where if I want to go to the movie theater, I go to the first showing of the day. I will not go at night because I want the theater to be basically empty. Uh-huh. So I will go at like a noon showing on a Tuesday, right? Because I don't want to be around anybody in the movie theater because other people have ruined the movie theater for me.
I have never been to a movie by myself.
It's amazing. You're like a king in a castle.
So here's the thing. I don't look at anybody else that goes by themselves as weird. I've certainly eaten in restaurants by myself and all that's fine. Something about going to the movies alone, it feels so awkward to me. And I don't think it's the going to the movies. I think it's getting the popcorn and eating the popcorn like by myself. Like there's something that feels really lonely about it. Like I want a date, you know, I want somebody next to me.
So you will eat at a restaurant where you are putting food into your mouth with no one with you. And that's fine. But then you go into a dark room where nobody can see you. And then
maybe it's because my hands are so big that when I go into the popcorn, I get so much that it goes everywhere. And I'm afraid people are going to be like, wow, what's up with that? She doesn't even bring a vacuum. Yeah.
So
thank you.
There's this other story here about how talkies disrupted movies for deaf people. It's a very long and involved article, but Jacob, it caught Jacob's interest. Jacob, because you were saying that it's because my mom is a deaf lady, right?
Yes, I had you in mind when I...
Well, this is interesting because when I go to the movies with my mom, which I hate to do and avoid at all costs, now what they have these really cool closed captioning devices that mount into the cup holder next to you. And then they go up and around in a kind of a J shape. And then a screen pops up and you can bend it and move it around and you can read what the dialogue is on the screen. It's actually amazing. It's this huge thing. So now I know deaf people who go to the movies all the time, but still to this day, because my mom and I bonded over movies when I was a young lad, I can't watch movies or TV without closed captioning. I can't do it. It's boring to me. I need to be able to read it and see it at the same time.
So if you go to the movies and they have one of these contraptions there where you can do it, do you use that at the movie as well?
No, because they only have a limited amount of them. So I would hate to have that for me, a person who can hear it, and then a deaf person walks up and requests it, and then they go, oh, we ran out. You know what I mean? I would rather.
Yeah, it's like taking a handicap spot or something. You don't want to do that. That's not
exactly
nice.
What it is. So what I do now is for instance, the movie Tenet. When the movie Tenet came out, I saw it in theaters, and then when it came out on Amazon Cinema, which that's before it just streams regularly, I will rent it again and I will watch it with closed captioning. So that's the way that I operate my movie life now.
Well, this article talked about silent films and how the deaf community really was upset when silent films went out and talkies came in, and they organized and they were able to really make a lot of strides as far as the American Deaf Theater and all of this other stuff. Did your mom ever talk about silent movies? Did she ever have a comment about it or watch them or anything, even though they were decades and decades older than she was?
No, but my mom was like a big fan and is a big fan of television and movies. It's a little bit more theatrical in nature. So she is a huge fan of I Love Lucy, largely because all of the expressions that that Desi Arnaz or Lucille Ball, they're huge expressions. And so if you go back to and you watch television at the time, look at Bob Hope's face or whatever it is, because they're all vaudevillian actors.
Right.
They have these huge expressions. So I guess my mom is a deaf woman, likes to see that because it's very clear coding. It's very indicated what the person's emotional state is. And then you join that with the closed captioning, and she's just having the time of her life.
Makes sense to me, yeah, because when you can see somebody's expression like that, you don't have to rely completely on reading.
Exactly.
So you can sort of know what to follow along by watching. The visual is there for you.
Yeah, totally. Hey, Kimmy, do you watch closed captioning? No closed captioning. What do you do?
Sometimes when I'm in bed at night, but not really usually.
Why just in bed at night? Why not at other times?
So I don't wake anyone up, so I can just follow along.
I see. That's so considerate of you. See, this is what I like about you, Kimmy Klein. You're so considerate. You're the opposite of me. I'm rude. I play things at full volume. I ruin people's stories about Tom Cruise. You'd be great at parties. I'd be awful.
Right.
Welcome back to the John Curley, Sherry Elicker Show. I was trying to figure out, Andrew, normally it's a more the bumper music is a little bit more like bapu bapu bapu, and there's horns and there's all this other kind of stuff. That one almost sounded like a like an intro to like a law firm that was about to advertise on Cairo Radio.
Maybe, but it still got some horns in it.
Yeah, but it's not as like
he's saying, "Bring back the bapu bapu, Andrew."
Yeah, bring back like the bapu bapu with the.
I'll
horns
try to
and
emphasize
the...
more bapu bapu.
Okay, thank you. I'm speaking to you in musician speak. It's the way that musicians talk to each other. We use onomatopoeisms to try to express sound.
Yes, ping, bang, bong.
No, it's more like if I need a certain drum beat, it's like give me like a taco 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 like that. See what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. I was just making onomatopoeia noises.
Right.
Which I like to.
Taco, cat, taco, cat, cat. See, that's a. If I speak to a musician, they know exactly what I'm talking about.
Too bad I'm not a musician.
Okay, good. Speaking of, by the way, someone who shouldn't be doing something, Sherry, what is this? There's a Kentucky family that decided to make their 6-year-old child run a full marathon. Now, a full marathon is 26.2 miles. I have done many, many, many half marathons. I have turned down every opportunity to do a full marathon because it's just not in my cards. Everything that I've ever read about it is it's bad for the body. It's very taxing unless you are highly, highly, highly trained like our program director, Brian Buckaloo, or if you're like a Kenyan super soldier. Outside of that, there's no way a regular human being should run 26.2 miles because you're going to get to like stage 3 dehydration. It's just a miserable experience. I've never wanted to do it. And the idea that they made a 6-year-old run it is, Sherry, you were saying that this is child abuse, right?
I think it is. I think this story is sort of phenomenal on a lot of levels. Number one, that the kid actually made it. He'd made it all 26 miles. But the other part is that the parents, you know, they're defending this now. Here's what they had to say. They said, "We have never forced any of our children to run a marathon, and we cannot even imagine that as feasible practically or emotionally. We have given all of our kids the option for every race. Last year, 2 kids ran it without us. This year, after begging us to join us, we allowed our 6-year-old to train and attempt it. Both parents gave him a 50-50 chance of completing it, and we were ready to pull the plug at any moment if he requested or if we viewed his safety at risk." So the kid made it. The other 5 kids crossed the finish line, and they waited an hour at mile – I'm sorry. They waited at mile 25 so they could all cross the finish line together. They waited an hour for him to catch up, I guess, and for the parents. The eyewitnesses, though, Jack, said that the kid was crying half the time. The parents' rebuttal to that is he isn't crying any more than he would be on any other Sunday morning or something like that, which is a little weird. Yeah, I know that. Wow, thank you. What's going on there?
Yeah.
And then they said that, you know, he'd never really broke down or said, "I want to stop," or resisted, and he made it through. The next day, they posted a picture of him with a bunch of Pringles, this Pringle snack pack, right? And I guess what they said was that he was struggling physically, but they didn't elaborate on that, and they stand by the fact that this kid wanted to do it. The race coordinators say that there was no age restriction, so they couldn't prevent him from doing it. And so the parents are saying it was a good experience for the whole family. I think it was terrible, really. This little kid doesn't know. You know, he doesn't. He's doing what his whole family is doing. He just wants to be a part of it. So, I mean, thankfully he's fine and he didn't get dehydrated or break anything. But to have a 6-year-old run 26 miles or even walk it in one day, that's outrageous.
I
can't drive 26 miles in one day. And I'm like, my legs are broken, you know? I mean, it's just, I just can't imagine.
I did ask our PD, Brian, who is an experienced and very successful marathon runner, about this, and he kind of immediately just started dunking on the kid for taking 8 hours. And
So he
actually didn't think that that's... He doesn't think anybody that runs a marathon slower than 5 hours should really say that they've run a marathon. That is more like a very lengthy walk with the kids.
Yeah.
So he busted on the 6-year-old?
Yeah,
saying,
exactly.
Saying you slowed the whole race down, you dumb 6-year-old?
Yeah. So I'm sure Brian lowered his Oakley sunglasses and just started cackling and laughing at this small child. 8 hours and 35 minutes, though, of physical exercise for a 6-year-old. I think people should contextualize that. 8 hours and 35 minutes of quote unquote
non-stop.
Running, crying, throwing up all over the place, whining, bad times in general. Right? Okay. Hey, Kimmy, you ever do a half marathon? Ever do a full marathon?
Oh my gosh. I did the Seahawks run once to impress my boyfriend at the time, but I just about died. I'm not a runner.
What was that, like
a much
mile
better
and a half?
Cheerleader?
2 miles?
No, it was like five. I don't even know. 12K?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that's like right down the block.